Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
It is my intention to go out and earn this nomination and to win.
On her first full day campaigning, Vice President Kamala Harris secured the backing of enough Democratic delegates to win the party's presidential nomination, following President Biden's stunning decision to step aside, upending the presidential race. The Democratic National Committee is now planning to hold a virtual roll call vote to lock in Harris as the party's nominee before the Democratic National Convention even begins. We'll get the latest and speak to a former Harris campaign worker who resigned from the Biden administration over Israel's war on Gaza. Plus, we go to Israel, where a group of public health professors are calling for an immediate ceasefire to prevent a polio outbreak after the highly infectious virus was detected in sewage in Gaza. Then to Bangladesh. Over 170 people have been killed during mass student protests. The government has arrested over 2,500 protesters in a sweeping crackdown.
This illegal government is trying to uproot students. Every moment, injured students are coming into this hospital. No local media is covering this properly.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. Vice President Kamala Harris has secured enough pledges of support from delegates to the Democratic National Convention to win the party's presidential nomination with no obvious challenger. On Monday, Harris traveled to Wilmington, Delaware, where she rallied campaign staff and supporters. Harris defended the Biden administration's accomplishments and referenced her work as a courtroom prosecutor who went after perpetrators of all kinds.
Predators who abused women, fraudsters who ripped off consumers, cheaters who broke the rules for their own gain. So hear me when I say, I know Donald Trump's type.
The Democratic National Committee confirmed it will hold a virtual roll call to confirm its presidential nominee by August 7th, roughly 2 weeks before the DNC kicks off in Chicago on August 19th. The Harris campaign says it raised $81 million during the first 24 hours of her candidacy, a record haul. This comes after Harris's campaign received nearly $100 million of previously raised funds for President Biden's now-canceled re-election campaign. Several Republican campaign finance lawyers have promised to challenge the transfer in a complaint to the Federal Election Commission. We'll have more on these stories after headlines. In Gaza, Israeli forces are continuing their new ground invasion of the southern city of Khan Yunis, where thousands are fleeing airstrikes and heavy artillery fire. At least 84 Palestinians were killed over the past day, with more than 300 others wounded. Medical staff at the Nasser Medical Complex report they're completely overwhelmed and have been forced to treat patients on hospital floors. Relatives gathered outside the hospital Monday to mourn the dead. This is Ahmed Samour, who lost his infant child and several relatives with an Israeli airstrike destroyed the home where they were sheltering.
We are tired. We are tired in Gaza. Every day our children are martyred. Every day, every moment. This is the blood of our children. It has not yet dried. No one told us to evacuate. They brought four floors crashing down on civilians.
Israel's military says it has begun vaccinating its soldiers against poliovirus after the paralytic disease was found in a number of wastewater samples in Gaza. The World Health Organization warns the risk of further spread remains high while Gaza's children go unvaccinated during Israel's assault, which has devastated Gaza's water and sanitation infrastructure. Public health officials have called it a major setback for global efforts to eradicate polio. We'll speak with a public health doctor in Israel later in the broadcast. Israeli military raids on the West Bank have killed at least seven Palestinians, including a paramedic who died in a drone strike on the Tulkarm refugee camp. Meanwhile, several international activists were hospitalized in the West Bank after they were assaulted by Jewish settlers in the town of Husra. Israeli soldiers who witnessed the attack reportedly fired warning shots but made no arrests. This comes just days after the International Court of Justice ruled Israel's decades-long occupation of the West Bank and Jerusalem is unlawful. Meanwhile, representatives from rival Palestinian factions, including Hamas and Fatah, have been meeting with Chinese mediators in Beijing, where earlier today they announced an interim national unity government responsible for the West Bank and Gaza. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu arrived in Washington, D.C. Monday ahead of his address to a joint session of Congress on Wednesday. Activists opposing Israel's assault on Gaza are planning major protests across D.C., while dozens of Democrats say they'll boycott the address. Last week, some 230 Capitol Hill staffers signed a letter calling on their bosses to either protest or boycott Netanyahu's address. Vice President and presumptive presidential candidate Kamala Harris will not preside over the address. She will instead attend an event with a sorority in Indianapolis. But Harris is reportedly planning to meet privately with Prime Minister Netanyahu during his visit. There are also reportedly plans for Biden to meet with Netanyahu this week, though it's unclear if he'll be well enough to do so as he recovers from COVID. A possible meeting between Netanyahu and Donald Trump has also not been confirmed. On Capitol Hill, lawmakers on the House Oversight Committee grilled Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle Monday over security failures ahead of the July 13th Trump assassination attempt, which Cheadle admitted was her agency's, quote, most significant operational failure.
The Secret Service's solemn mission is to protect our nation's leaders. On July 13th, we failed. As a director of the United States Secret Service, I take full responsibility for any security lapse of our agency.
Both Democrats and Republicans are calling on Cheadle to resign after she repeatedly stonewalled lawmakers when pressed on more specifics around what went wrong. Among the few things Cheadle did reveal was that her agency was informed about a suspicious figure multiple times before the shooting and that the roof the gunman shot from had been identified as a potential security vulnerability. She also said the shooter was not considered a threat until, quote, seconds before the gunfire started, unquote. Meanwhile, House Republicans used Monday's hearing to lash out at the Secret Service's DEI policies. That's diversity, equity, and inclusion in a series of misogynistic attacks. Congressmember Tim Burchett of Tennessee told Cheadle, quote, ma'am, you are a DEI horror story, while Texas lawmaker Michael Cloud asked Cheadle, quote, does every Secret Service agent meet the same qualifications, or do you have different standards for different people? A federal judge has sentenced a January 6 rioter who performed a Nazi salute at the top of the Capitol steps to 5 years in prison and a $20,000 fine. Tyler Dykes, a former Marine, also attended the infamous 2017 Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, Virginia. During his sentencing hearing, Tyler said, quote, I stand with President Trump and support him to be the next president of our country. In related news, a Republican state senator from Ohio was forced to apologize after he said only a civil war would save the country if Trump loses in November. George Lang made the comments during vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance's first solo campaign rally in his hometown of Middletown, Ohio.
I believe wholeheartedly Donald Trump and Butler County's J.D. Vance are the last chance to save our country politically. I'm afraid if we lose this one, it's going to take a civil war to save the country, and it will be saved.
Ohio Senate Democrats said in response, quote, inciting violence over an election that hasn't even occurred yet is irresponsible and undemocratic, unquote. When J.D. Vance took to the stage at the Middletown, Ohio rally, he repeatedly attacked Kamala Harris and went on a tangent about Diet Mountain Dew.
It is the weirdest thing to me. Democrats say that it is racist to believe. Well, they say it's racist to do anything. I had a Diet Mountain Dew yesterday and one today. I'm sure they're going to call that racist, too, but it's good.
Here in New York, activists gathered Monday to observe the Union Square climate clock as it ticked down below 5 years for the first time ever. Democracy Now! Spoke to climate activist Gan Golan.
We're here today because it is Climate Emergency Day. It's the day when the climate clock ticks down from 5 years to 4 years, meaning we now have 4 years to rapidly accelerate progress on climate solutions to avoid the worst of climate catastrophe. And it is a very short amount of time, and that is why we need to push politicians, corporations, and move the media and everyone to understand that the world has a deadline.
In Greenland, longtime anti-whaling and environmental activist Paul Watson has been detained in the capital Nuuk under an international arrest warrant issued by Japan. Watson was arrested as his ship docked in Greenland before setting off to the North Pacific on a mission to intercept a Japanese whaling ship. Watson, who's the founder of Sea Shepherd Conservation Society and co-founded Greenpeace, has led countless direct actions over the years. Greenland authorities have refused to grant him bail and could extradite the Canadian-American citizen to Japan, where he could face a maximum sentence of 15 years in prison. A Russian court has sentenced the Russian-American journalist Alsu Karmasheva to 6.5 years in prison after convicting her of spreading false information about the Russian army. Karmasheva is an editor with the U.S. government-funded news service Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, which called the trial and conviction a mockery of justice and demanded Karmasheva be reunited with her family. She said in a prior courtroom appearance she had not heard her children's voices in months.
The last time was in October last year. I don't have permission to make calls. I have no opportunity to call. I don't even have the opportunity to correspond. That is, letters by mail take a month and a half.
And how do you feel?
Steadily worse.
In France, hundreds of people marched in Paris Saturday to protest the participation of the Israeli delegation in the 2024 Summer Olympics amidst Israel's relentless war on Gaza. The Olympic Games kick off in Paris Friday. Protesters wave Palestinian flags, carrying banners that read "Ban Israel" and "Genocide is not an Olympic event."
Israeli athletes' participation in the Olympics is very shocking, especially when we know what has been happening for 8 months in Gaza. There are dozens and dozens of young Palestinian athletes who will never be able to participate in the Olympic Games, and they can say thank you to Israel for that, and the international community, because I think that Israel allows itself to behave like this because the international community has only been giving it little slaps on the wrist for decades.
And in Bangladesh, the death toll from a crackdown on massive student protests has risen to at least 174, with more than 2,500 people arrested after police and soldiers were granted shoot-on-sight orders amidst the unrest. Internet access in most of Bangladesh remained dark for a fifth day as the government declared a public holiday Monday. Protesters are seeking job security and higher pay and want an end to civil service job quotas they call discriminatory. We'll have more on Bangladesh later in the broadcast. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. This is War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
On her first full day of campaigning, Vice President Kamala Harris secured the backing of enough Democratic delegates to win the party's presidential nomination. The Democratic Party has quickly coalesced around Harris following President Biden's stunning announcement Sunday that he's dropping out of his reelection bid. The Democratic National Convention begins in Chicago in 4 weeks, but the Democratic National Committee is moving ahead with a virtual roll call vote to lock in Harris as the party's nominee by August 7th. On Monday, Kamala Harris picked up some major endorsements, including former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and every Democratic governor, including some who were seen as potential rivals to Harris, including Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear, Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, and Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro. Harris has tapped former Attorney General Eric Holder to vet potential running mates. Since Sunday afternoon, Harris has raised over $100 million, including a record $81 million in the first 24 hours of her campaign. On Monday, Harris addressed campaign staffers in Wilmington.
Before I was elected as vice president, before I was elected as United States Senator, I was the elected attorney general, as I've mentioned, of California. And before that, I was a courtroom prosecutor. In those roles, I took on perpetrators of all kinds. Who abused women, fraudsters who ripped off consumers, cheaters who broke the rules for their own gain. So hear me when I say, I know Donald Trump's type.
While the Democrats are quickly moving forward on nominating Kamala Harris, there are still voices in the party calling for an open convention in Chicago to pick the party's nominee. Democratic Congressmember Rashida Tlaib of Michigan said in a statement, quote, I support a transparent democratic process at an open convention and hope there is a fair vote on the resolutions at the DNC that calls for an arms embargo to stop the Israeli government's war crimes, unquote. Harris is heading to campaign in Milwaukee today. She's declined to preside over the Senate Wednesday when Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu addresses a joint session of Congress. She'll be in Indianapolis. We're joined now by Waleed Shaheed, Democratic strategist, advisor to the Uncommitted campaign, previously spokesperson for Justice Democrats, and former senior advisor for the campaigns of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Jamal Bowman. Welcome back to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us. If you could start off, Waleed, by just responding to these historic events that took place this weekend, with President Biden suffering from COVID, not to mention low poll ratings and enormous pressure from within his party, announcing he's stepping aside and endorsing Kamala Harris to be president.
So since February, the Uncommitted movement has been saying that President Biden's disastrous policy on Gaza was disqualifying enough for him to be the Democratic nominee because the policy had fractured the Democratic Party. This was on top of growing concerns amongst the party's electorate, the party's base, about Biden's positions on the economy, inflation, cost of living, and his age. And so that coalition had been fracturing for months preceding the debate performance, and that coalition wasn't really there to back the president once he had a disastrous debate performance. And so for a long time now, the Uncommitted movement, particularly in states like Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin, our allies in places like Georgia, have been saying that they've been waiting to see President Biden change course on Gaza. That hasn't really come. And so many of our communities in swing states have been saying that, you know, yesterday or this past week, they breathed a sigh of relief that President Biden was no longer the nominee. And they're hoping that Kamala Harris says, not another bomb, turns the page on Biden's disastrous policy on Gaza and shapes a new course on Middle East policy.
Juan,
the rapid backing of Kamala Harris by the Democratic establishment, it reminds me to some degree of what happened in in 2020 when over a weekend in the midst of the primary with Bernie Sanders gaining momentum, that suddenly the Democratic establishment united behind Biden.
Yeah, I mean, the role of the vice president is to take the role of the president when the president is incapacitated. We're in uncharted waters here, I guess. Maybe 1968 is the last time that this happened. But Vice President Harris is set up to win the nomination. My understanding is one of the reasons why President Obama has not endorsed Kamala Harris is to allow an open democratic process. But there hasn't been candidates who've thrown their hats in the ring to challenge Harris, in part because it's an insurmountable task to overcome the endorsements and that she's received from President Biden and numerous Democratic officials, numerous labor unions. So it is, you know, it seems 99% the chance that she will be the nominee. I think delegates still want their voices heard and still want some assurances about her policy positions, particularly on issues related to the war in Gaza and whether she will change, whether she will turn the page. Her declining to sit behind Netanyahu at the congressional address in Washington on Wednesday is a step in the right direction, but I think people do want to see a policy change or some signals of a policy change that a Harris administration would be different than President Biden's financial backing and arms shipments to what has been a genocide in Gaza.
And you mentioned the Democratic convention in 68. I happen to have been outside that convention as one of the protesters back then in 1968. But what are the limits of being able to use that analogy for the current situation?
Obviously, there were American troops in Vietnam, and that played a huge role in the war being unpopular in the United States. But one of the analogies is that when Vietnam began to be televised in the United States, that drove the war to be incredibly unpopular. And today, young people, especially on social media, have access to journalists in Gaza who are reporting from the ground, civilians in Gaza who are posting on Instagram and TikTok and social media about the horrific conditions of the war and showing the world that these are American weapons that are dropping on Palestinian civilians in Gaza. And so I do think that there will be actions at the convention inside and outside that pressure the Democratic Party, pressure the Biden-Harris administration and the presumptive nominee, Kamala Harris, to adopt new policy and enforce both American law and international law to ensure that no weapons are being dropped indiscriminately on civilians in any war, but particularly this one, because voicing opposition to this war should be a democratic principle, should be a principle of the Democratic Party, but has been really crushed over the last few months. And that dissent has been increasingly criminalized with both inside the party and outside the party. And so we are hoping to make our voices heard as an uncommitted movement and as an uncommitted delegation inside the convention, outside the convention. People can go to our website, uncommittedmovement.com, to learn about those mobilizations happening around the Democratic National Convention. But we are in this fight, not just for the next few months, but for the next few years, to shape a Democratic Party that treats Israelis and Palestinians as equal human beings who are deserving of the same human rights and civil rights.
And Waleed, what about the Republicans? When I was covering a protest against the police killing in two separate instances of black men in Milwaukee during and right before the convention, a Milwaukee artist came up to me and said, "Where is the protest?" He said, "It's only us local Milwaukee residents who are engaging in small protests. I hear about big protests planned for Chicago. What about here? What about against Trump?" Your thoughts?
I think lots of people in this movement feel that because it's the current administration and the current Democratic Party that's in power, that they feel like it's their duty to pressure the people who are currently in power. There are almost no voices in the uncommitted movement that believe Donald Trump would be or J.D. Vance would be better on Palestinian human rights or on policy toward on the Israel-Palestine question. I think most people see the Democratic Party as their vehicle to enact change on this issue and want to bring pressure to have that party on to align with the majority of its voters who believe that there should be a permanent ceasefire and not a blank check to the IDF or to Netanyahu. And so I think that people are using their voices in the party they belong to. The uncommitted movement is a movement of Democrats. And so we are making clear that we think that Biden and the White House's disastrous policy on Gaza makes it harder for them to defeat Trump. In fact, claiming, having a campaign based on democracy, having a campaign fighting far-right authoritarianism while sending bombs to one of the world's biggest far-right authoritarians, Netanyahu, who is now visiting Washington, D.C., makes a mockery of our party's claim to be fighting on the right side of history, fighting on the behalf of democracy, and we want to see that party change course.
Well, we want to thank you for being with us. Waleed Shaheed, Democratic strategist, advisor to the Uncommitted Campaign, previously spokesperson for Justice Democrats, and former senior advisor for the campaigns of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Jamal Bowman. Final question as we talk about current Congress members and senators. Bernie Sanders has yet to endorse Kamala Harris, but he said actually that he will. Your thoughts on him holding back, and do you believe it has to do with Gaza?
My understanding is one of the reasons why Bernie stuck with Biden for so long was because Bernie and Biden were negotiating what Biden's economic agenda would be for the 2024 election. And I think he wants, Bernie Sanders wants those same assurances on what Kamala Harris's economic agenda would be for the 2024 election. And Bernie has said very publicly that he believes if the referendum, if the November election is a referendum on progressive economics versus billionaire economics, that that the Democrats would win, and I think he's waiting for that phone call.
Well, Waleed Shaheed, thanks so much for being here. Next up, we're going to speak with a former Harris campaign worker who resigned from the Biden administration over U.S. support for Israel's war on Gaza. Stay with us.
Cold-blooded old time. Cold-blooded old times. Cold-blooded old times. The type of memories that turn your bones to glass. Turn your bones to glass. Mother came rushing in. Said we didn't see a thing. We said we didn't see a thing. And father left at 8, nearly splintering the gate. Cold-blooded old times.
Cold-blooded old times by Smog. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. As we continue to look at Vice President Kamala Harris, Vice President Kamala Harris's run for the White House, we're joined by Lily Greenberg Call. She worked on Kamala Harris's presidential campaign in 2019. Lily Greenberg Call went on to join the Biden administration, but resigned from her position in the Interior Department to protest Biden's support for Israel's war on Gaza. She was the first Jewish political appointee to resign over Biden's policies on Gaza. In May, she'd been working as special assistant to the chief of staff at the Interior Department. She just wrote an article for The Guardian headlined, "I Work to Elect Kamala Harris. She Must Break with Biden on Israel and Palestine." Welcome back to Democracy Now!, Lily. Explain exactly what your demand is.
So, President Biden's unconditional support for Israel's assault on Gaza has been widely unpopular, you know, with Americans writ large, with Democrats, again, with American voters across the board, and even within the American Jewish community. So Vice President Harris now has an opportunity to chart a new path, and not just because it's the right thing to do, but because it's actually both the popular and politically savvy thing for her to do. At this moment, she needs to support an arms embargo to Israel. She needs to reject AIPAC's right-wing agenda, and she needs to use all of the U.S.'s leverage to broker a lasting ceasefire, a hostage exchange, and a meaningful status quo change in Israel-Palestine that means a, you know, safety and a thriving future for all Palestinians and Israelis.
And what is your sense that she would be willing to make that break from Biden policies, especially in the midst of a very shortened presidential campaign?
Well, you know, when I was in the administration, actually, I heard reports that she was pushing the president to pursue a more humane policy that complied with international law. You know, she was the first administration official to actually use the word ceasefire, albeit calling for a six-week one. But there were actually some reports that that was an effort by the president's staff to kind of water down her speech in Selma when she first called for a six-week ceasefire. So, you know, it's really disappointing to think that potentially the president and the president's staff were not only not listening to the majority of the American people